Wherever you are, we are. Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, a historic black church in South Carolina goes up in flames. We'll have the latest, including we'll chat with a South Carolina state representative who has been there all night. Also, we'll talk to Congresswoman Alma Adams of North Carolina about these church burnings. What can President Barack Obama do to get real criminal justice reform? Who can he partner with on the GOP side? We'll talk with the top exec with the Brennan Center. Also, my one-on-one interview with Labor Secretary Tom Perez about the push for change to overtime rules, how this could change your pocketbook. Also, it's Wild Tonight Wednesday, and our comedians are in the house. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Folks, we have seen a stunning slew of church burnings in the South since the massacre at Emmanuel AME. Well, last night, another church went up in flame, this time in South Carolina. The fire involved the Mount Zion African Methodist Episcopal Church in Greeleyville, South Carolina. And you're looking at the aftermath. Now, here's what also happened. 20 years ago, the KKK torched this church. And when it was rebuilt, President Bill Clinton was there when it reopened. Now, according to the Associated Press, a federal source says the initial determination is that this was not arson, but that is raising lots of questions for a number of people who are saying, how can you have eight black churches go up in flames in a week and a half, and then police come back and say, well, it was dealing with lightning or was dealing with wiring? Joining us right now is South Carolina State Representative Cesar McKnight. He joins us via phone. He was at the scene last night. I saw his tweet, and he's joining us. Also, North Carolina Congresswoman Alma Adams is also joining us as well. Representative McKnight, I want to go to you first, Cesar, because you were there last night. You were tweeting various photos as well. So give us a sense of what you saw and also how historic is this church to South Carolina?
Well, good morning, everyone. When I first got here last night, well, I was sitting at home and I saw on Facebook a friend say that a church was burning in Greeleyville. And then I saw another post that said it was Mount Zion, and instantly that struck a nerve with me because I knew Mount Zion had been burned 20 years ago, and I was like, oh my goodness, not again. So I instantly jumped in my vehicle, came here, and when I got here, the church was totally engulfed, and you know, we had massive amounts of law enforcement and fire on the scene. And they were outing the fire, and it was just heartbreaking. The church is a small, in this community, this is a regular sized church. It may have 200 members, and around here in this rural area, that's a pretty good sized church. So for them to lose their church twice in 20 years is just heartbreaking, particularly considering the circumstances that we find ourselves in with what happened just 45 minutes down the road in Charleston with the tragic death of nine people. So it was just heartbreaking.
Representative McKnight, again, Associated Press is reporting that a federal source said that a storm was passing over that area last night. They say that is likely not arson. We've seen this determination in some of these church burnings. One, they said a tree fell on the church. Another said it was wiring. But what bothers me the most is that in one of the other church burnings, I believe was in North Carolina, they immediately ruled out hate crimes, but there's nobody who's been arrested. There's no suspect. And I'm just trying to figure out how do you determine motive. In fact, that was one of the police officials said, well, this could be kids being kids. Well, Dylan Roth was 21 years old, and we didn't know about him until after the fact. And so I guess I'm just bothered by this early determination where you're ruling things out when you don't even have suspects.
Well, I share your sentiment. If this is a coincidence, this is just something that's astronomically out of the ordinary in that how can a church that burned 20 years ago burn again under circumstance, under such inflamed circumstances that we have now in the country and in the region? So I share with you, your healthy level of skepticism. But that being said, our authorities here seem to be really focused on getting this right. And their attitude, and talking with them at first last night, they seem to think at first it was arson. Okay. I didn't say that last night because, you know, it wasn't an official word. So my belief is they worked from the principle that this was arson, and then they started working it down to where it is now. Now, if something else comes out, that's fine. Like I said, this
right.
is one huge coincidence to have what happened here happen under the circumstances it did. But here, and I'm speaking specifically of Greeleyville, I'm giving law enforcement the benefit of the doubt. I think they did a thorough job. Have done a thorough job, because as soon as this
right.
church was burning, we had ATF on the scene, we had FBI on the scene, we had SLED, we had everybody here.
Congresswoman Alma Adams, we have seen this federal response take place in some of these other burnings as well. As a member of Congress, as a former member of the North Carolina legislature, how concerned are you, and are we seeing the proper response from local, state, and federal authorities?
Thank you, Roland. I share your concern and the representative who spoke a moment ago. I'm very concerned about what's going on, not only the other burnings, but also here in North Carolina. As you know, we had a church to burn, the Briar Creek Church in Charlotte. It has been determined that it's an arson. It has not been determined that it's a hate crime, or at least that's what they're saying. But certainly the authorities are investigating it. The FBI is involved at this point. I've had a conversation with the pastor there, and we'll be meeting with him on tomorrow. There's been extensive damage. There's a youth program that was going on, and it's they've had to sort of put those children at another site, but the program's still going on. So we're very concerned that this fire occurred, and the others as well, especially in view of what has happened in Charleston. As far as I'm concerned, well, we may not want to, it may not be defined as a hate crime, but certainly it's a hateful act.
Well, I gotta ask you this here, because I gotta ask you this here, Congresswoman Adams. We saw FBI director, when it came to Charleston, he said, this is not terrorism. And all of a sudden, when it comes to these churches, I guess what concerns me is that we somehow quickly apply terrorism to the Boston bombing. But when it comes to black folks, 9 killed in the church by a racist killer. When it comes to churches burning, we don't even want to even consider the notion of terrorism, when the reality is black folks have had to deal with domestic terrorism from the moment we touched the soil of America.
Well, I agree with you, and I do think that sometimes we are a bit premature about making determinations. We're going to be very watchful, not only in this case, but in the others as well, and you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, we, Roland, we just don't want to deal with racism. We don't want to really talk about racism and, of course, with the incident in Charleston. We know that clearly it was a hate crime. And I think that sometimes rather than deal head on with the issue, we want to skirt around it. But we're going to stay on top of it, and clearly we're going to do what we can to make sure that this church is restored and that the community is comforted in this particular case.
Congresswoman Alma Adams, it's really appreciated. Thank you so very much. And also South Carolina Representative McKnight, we also appreciate you joining us as well, and we'll stay in touch with you as we get more information on this church burning. We certainly appreciate it. Thanks so much. We come back.
Thank you.
President Barack Obama says criminal justice reform will be a priority of his administration. Who is he going to partner with on the GOP side? We'll talk with the head of the D.C. office of the Brennan Center about that. Also, folks, later in the show, we'll talk to actor and dancer Steven Twitch Boss. He's one of the stars in Magic Mike XXL, so we'll have a great conversation with him. Plus, it's Wild Night Wednesday, so we might as well have a little fun with our comedians. For the latest news, stay up to date and informed at news1.com. Hit me up on Twitter at Roland S. Martin, or go to News 1. It is 9 after the hour. News 1 now on TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 now. With Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Folks, yesterday we talked about the issue of criminal justice reform and how it is needed in this country and how President Barack Obama should see this as a centerpiece now that so many other issues have passed. Well, yesterday when he was speaking at a news conference with the Brazilian president, he got the question, and here's his response.
How am I going to spend whatever political capital that I've built up? The prospect of bipartisan legislation around the criminal justice system, something that I think directly speaks to some of the themes I mentioned on Friday. And we've seen some really interesting leadership from some unlikely Republican legislators, very sincerely concerned about making progress there.
This is the moment. The question is whether or not that's going to happen. Joining us on our panel, of course, we have Paris Chenard, a political consultant, Candace Tolliver Burns, principal with the group consulting firm. We also have Dr. Wilmer Leon, political scientist and syndicated radio host on Sirius XM Radio. And joining us is the director and counsel for the Brennan Center for Justice, Nicole Austin Hillary. So, Nicole, where do we stand right now? Because it's people hear criminal justice reform, but there are a number of bills that apply to this issue. What is being proposed, and so people can know what they should be calling about and getting behind?
Sure. And you are right, Roland. We are at a very important moment, and there are several things that have been proposed. Let me tell you about three key bills that are right now pending in Congress. Just last week, we had a bipartisan bill introduced in the House by Congressman Bobby Scott and Congressman Sensenbrenner. This is a bipartisan bill that is called the Safe Justice Act. It is a comprehensive bill that is going to look at how we can improve prisons, how we can deal with both front-end and back-end reforms. And when we talk about front-end and back-end reforms, we're talking about the things that cause people to go to prison, as well as the things that happen once people get out of prison, like collateral consequences. That's what's going on in the House. In the Senate, we have the Smarter Sentencing Act, which was introduced by Senators Durbin and Lee. It is also a bipartisan bill. It is meant to try to deal with the sentencing structure that we have in this country. And I know your viewers are familiar with that, Roland, because in the past when we talked about sentencing, when it came to the disparity between crack and powder cocaine sentences, folks clearly understood that there were differences in terms of how people were sentenced. So we know that has been an issue. And this particular bill would try to deal with that issue as well. The Fair Sentencing Act back in 2010 lessened the disparity between those sentences, but it didn't completely eliminate it. So this bill will try to retroactively deal with some of that. And then we also have a corrections bill in the Senate that was introduced by Senator Cornyn. And that bill is going to try to help reform the prison system and what kinds of experiences people have when they're in prison, what kinds of opportunities they have for vocational training, educational training. So those are key bills. It is not clear which one of them will move. It is not clear which one of them at the end of the day will be the panacea to try to deal with all these issues. But what's important for folks to understand right now is that there is bipartisan focus on these issues and that we have some momentum. So that's what folks need to be focused on.
And the point I made is, this is a unique circumstance you have here, where you literally have the Koch brothers,
right,
and Newt Gingrich and Grover Norquist align with a Van Jones, a ACLU, NAACP. Right. I mean, but motives are different. And I'm fine with that. You have many conservatives who are saying that, look, we simply can't afford to keep throwing folks in jail. You got progressives who are saying it's a moral issue. I don't care what your motive is, change the policy.
I mean, we are at a unique opportunity when you have the private sector, outside groups, and bipartisan support inside the Congress, which you just laid out. But the key thing that we have to make sure that happens, and I've met with the Koch Institute about this, Koch brothers, and it's making sure leadership gets on board and helps push it. So your point was absolutely correct. We don't know which one of these three will get the momentum and be pushed forward. But we all know that it has to be a priority from leadership. And so when people are making calls, we need to make sure that Speaker Boehner, you know, Leader McCarthy on the House side and also on the Senate side, people know in leadership there, since Republicans are in power, that this is a priority and that they push it.
So politics aside, I'm a mother of a one-year-old African-American son. And so when I think about allies or on both sides of the equation, working together to find a solution to prevent more of our African-American men and women ending up in the prison system, I'm relieved, I'm grateful, I'm ready to see some real action beyond the introduction of these bills. It's got to happen. So it's counterintuitive to think that perhaps the Koch brothers would be in cahoots, if you will, or in partnership with the Van Jones or the Democratic leadership or, you know, beyond their normal track. But as far as I'm concerned, we need every dog in this fight to change the status
quo. But, Wilma, this is why what I said yesterday was I want to see the president go to the National Bar Association or some other particular group and give a major speech on this and say to America, this is an American priority. Absolutely. This is a priority of my administration, and put the full force and weight of the presidency and the White House behind this. And because you do have this, you have Republican governors, John Kasich in Ohio, for example, who has been pushing this issue as well. You had Governor Bob McDonnell, who restored the voting rights of ex-felons before he left office when he was governor Republican in Virginia. So there is a moment here to literally get something done. After all of these years of throwing folks in prison, after changing the crazy drug laws and the whole, and so many black folks going to jail and poor folks, and I was seeing poor whites who are going to jail for crazy stuff with meth in a lot of these small towns.
Well, this is why the motivations actually do matter, is because part of the reason why we got to this place in the first place was because Republicans seized on the war on drugs as a political advantage.
But Democrats did too.
No, I realize that. So. But because they did not want to be depicted
right.
as being soft on crime.
But both sides played politics.
I realize
with the lives
that, but understand who drove the initiative initially, and unfortunately, the Democrats didn't have the backbone to stand up and fight against it.
Yeah, but
now wait a minute, Roland. Now what we're seeing is a shift in public sentiment across the board in terms of social justice issues, and Republicans now want to be sure, as we look at 2016, that they're on the right side of the issue as it relates to public sentiment and its shift. That's why motives matter, because if the public sentiment starts to shift again, you've got to be sure that this isn't just politically driven, that people are actually committed to bringing about change.
I understand that, but what you had is, first of all, initially when it came to drug treatment in America, not throwing people in jail, that initially was what President Richard Nixon had laid out. Then it shifted to this whole issue in terms of war on drugs. But what happened in the 80s, we saw with the death of Lynn Bias, mm-hmm. when we had a Democratic leadership in the House who passed the law. Numerous Democrats voted for it. So my whole point is, I'm not letting anybody off the hook. Democrats and Republicans contributed to this problem we have with criminal justice reform. And what I'm saying is, and again, the Republicans who are now seeing, wait a minute, we have spent billions and billions of dollars and our states are going broke. Others are saying it's a moral issue. I'm not sweating what your motive is if the end result is let's change public policy.
Exactly, Roland. And let me just say this. Politicians on the right and the left have all said we got it wrong in the 80s. We got it wrong. And this issue of mass incarceration, of over-incarceration in the United States is a result of us getting it wrong. And let me go back to your point about leadership and Roland, your point about the president. The Brennan Center just produced a book that is called The Solutions Book. We got every major presumed and assumed at the time individual running for president to submit an essay saying what their vision is for criminal justice reform. So yes, leadership is key, and I think the president does have to talk about this, and everybody who is running for president has to be held accountable. And I urge folks to take a look at the essays that they wrote in this book. Hold them accountable and say, what about these issues that you pointed out? You know, Governor Christie has an essay in our book. Everyone other than Jeb Bush Bush, and that wasn't because he didn't want to. He had some issues getting something into us in time, but they all laid out their framework, including Mrs. Clinton. And then also with respect to the House and the Senate, in addition to the individuals that you named who run the House and the Senate, it's also key to get to the committee chairperson.
Right.
Senator Grassley runs the Senate Judiciary Committee, and on the House side, Mr. Sensenbrenner is the subcommittee chairperson for the relevant subcommittee in the House overseeing these bills. So it's important that people reach out to them as well.
And again, for folks, the folks who are watching to understand, this is not a black thing, it's not a Hispanic thing, it's not a white thing, but it's also, but it affects all of us, and more importantly, it's also an economic thing, because when you're throwing folks in jail, then they can't get jobs when they get out, and then you have recidivism, they're going right back in, can't take care of families, not being taxpayers, and all of a sudden now, and here's the other thing that people don't realize, you all of a sudden go to jail, you can't even get financial aid to go to college. And so this is a huge issue, and that's why, and again, I appreciate the president's comments yesterday, but I want to see that it be a major speech from the president on this issue and say this is an American priority, a national priority, and say let's get it done and drive it through before the end of 2015.
And Roland, let me say, I know that folks at the White House, because we work with his policy people, they are concerned about these issues. They are talking about these issues. They are focused on them. So you know, let's
I want it on Main Street and MLK Street, not just they're concerned about
Understood.
I appreciate it. Thank you so very much. Folks, we come back. We'll chat from Labor Secretary Tom Perez about the new overtime payroll rules, and we'll talk about that with our panel as well. It is 24 after the hour. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, major changes to overtime laws. President Barack Obama says it's important for us to give folks who are out there working to stop allowing them to not get paid, who are working 60, 70 hours a week. I caught up with Labor Secretary Tom Perez, who explained who these laws can help and what it means for you, the consumer. Secretary Perez, who is actually helped by the new overtime regulations?
Managers. When I was a kid, managers used to be middle-class jobs. They were working 60 hours a week, and they were paid a decent wage to do important work. In 2004, the Bush administration changed the rules around who's eligible for overtime and who could be exempt. They changed the rules in a way that really helped employers and really hurt workers. So you have a situation where people work 60, 70 hours a week. They're called a manager, but they're not paid like a manager. We're trying to fix that, because that's just not fair. It's just not fair.
So we're talking about upwards of 5 million people? Is that the number?
Yeah, potentially. And again, these are folks who are opening the place, they're closing the place, they're hiring people. They're really among the most responsible players in the workforce, and they're not getting paid as such. And so what we're saying is, if you are a manager, you've got to be treated like one. And so the president's proposal raises the threshold from the current amount, which is about $23,000, $24,000, to roughly $50,000, because this is about making sure we continue to strengthen the middle class.
Now, is this largely executive action, or does it require congressional approval?
This is a regulation. So we're going to have a notice and comment period. We'll take comments. We've done a lot of outreach to various stakeholders, including the business community. And at the end of this process, a 60-day comment period, we will look at those comments, and then we will make adjustments if appropriate to the final rule, and have it out hopefully sometime early mid next year.
Isn't this a perfect example of how we've seen so many different changes from employers that has a direct impact also on income inequality, where again we've seen productivity stay at a very high level during the last 6-7 years. Corporate profits go up, but the workers are saying, wait a minute, right, I'm the one having to do all the work.
Right. This is about fairness fundamentally. This is about what it means to be in the middle class. This is about hardworking people who have to skip their kids' baseball games, they skip the family dinners, they're working 70 hours a week, and they're barely making ends meet. Again, when I was a kid, you know, when my parents, the friends of my parents were managers, you know, they had stature. They had a middle class job. And these middle class jobs all too frequently have been hollowed out because of this rule, because of what happened in 2004. And we're going to fix that to create a level playing field so that if you're working 60, 70 hours a week, you don't have to give 20 of those hours for free. That's what's happening right now. And that's just not fair. And this will help restore middle class wages for potentially millions of workers.
All right, Secretary Perez, I appreciate it. Good seeing
you.
Thanks a bunch.
Always a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Folks, at the end of the day, it comes down to money, and that is putting more money in the pockets of people. And as I said, we've seen productivity rise because companies are forcing people to work more and more and more for that same check.
It comes down to, should you be compensated for what you do? And also on the business side, it comes down to how much profit is enough? And at some point, we have to decide that people in this country are actually going to be paid, compensated somewhat fairly for the work that they contribute.
I think what we need to do is listen to the private sector first, the small business owners, and see how this will affect them, because ultimately what's going to happen is the cost is going to arise from is going to be passed on to the consumers. And what will probably happen is that in order to make these minimums or raise these, give these people the overtime pay, they're going to probably reduce the amount of hours that they're going to be out to work, or give them a raise to prevent them from paying the overtime.
No, but here's the problem here. What he is saying in these cases, these are people who are working, who they are classifying as managers, who are working 60 and 70 hours a week. Okay to the employers, well, maybe why don't you say, fine, you're not gonna work 60 or 70, you're gonna work 50. But the problem we have is the numbers don't lie. We have seen in the last 6 years, a tremendous productivity increased. Wages remain stagnant, and the companies made more and more profit. At some point, you can't keep asking people to essentially keep doing more and more and more and more and more, but you're not going to get compensated for it.
Roland, the change is inevitable. You've seen an increase in the minimum wage. Target, Walmart, McDonald's, they've all been pushed to raise their wages. The same thing is going to happen with this overtime issue. And listen, I'm a working mom. I think about my sister, who's a manager at a fast food establishment, and I know the number of hours that she works. I know how she toils to pay for tuition, to pay for food, shelter, and clothing for her kids. These folks need and deserve to be paid and compensated for their work, and it's going to happen.
And Roland, let me take this to the 20,000 foot level, getting away from the details. This is about the issue of economic inequality in this country. It is a huge issue. Individuals who feel like the gap is simply growing between the haves and the have-nots, and this is a key step towards trying to ensure that everyday working people, middle-class people, feel like they are getting more out of the system. It is vitally important. And again, when we talk about the presidential candidates, folks have got to start talking about this. That whole 99% issue, that's not going away. Americans have got to feel like that inequality gap is not something that is growing, but is rather decreasing.
Again, to your point about Walmart, McDonald's, and all these companies, the last thing they want to see are thousands of people protesting and marching, and a major social media campaign saying it's time for you guys to pay up. And so all these companies who we're lauding for making these voluntary moves, trust me, they ain't voluntary.
Listen, they're moving in the right direction.
No, they are. No, but my whole point is, but this is what happens when people say enough is enough.
Yes, exactly.
I certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much, folks. Thank you very much. We come back, I'll chat with actor and dancer Steven Twitch Boss about his new movie, Magic Mike XX. L plus Ballin' Out Wednesday. And you know we got the crazy comedians, and they got all kind of crazy stuff to say. It is 25 before top of the hour. News 1 now on TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, you've seen him in Step Up 3D and Step Up Revolution, but his next film is for, let's just say, a cadre of women. Actor, dancer, DJ Twitch Boss is dancing for singles, trying to make it rain as Malik in the Magic Mike sequel, Magic Mike XXL. Here's a G-rated glimpse. Well, it's not hard to figure out what Magic Mike XXL is about. His theater is Wednesday, July 1st. Twitch, how you doing?
I'm great, man. It's good to be here.
All right, so exactly how do you prepare for this role? Do you troll adult stores? Do you, what kind of set visits did y'all actually have to make?
Well, the preparation, it kind of went in sections. A, you got to get the body right. So that means you got to cut out all foods that taste good. You know, basically when you eat chicken, it's just chicken. You know what I mean? No seasoning, no salt, no pepper, anything like that. And workout schedule, incredibly tough. I mean, you saw the guys in there. They're like chiseled crazy.
Y'all,
you know?
What? So we worked out three times a day?
We worked out twice a day, absolutely.
For how long?
About an hour at a time, but we also had dance rehearsals, you know, morning and night. There was a lot of performances in this movie, and it's a lot of variety. It's not necessarily just dancing. I don't want to give away too much, but, you know, and it's as funny as it sounds, we might revolutionize the industry of male entertainment with this one. You know what I'm saying? You laughing, but there might be a lane for you too. You know what I mean? We might be doing
I can imagine y'all sitting here with the costume people and going, you know what? Okay, I'll do that G-string over that one.
With the G's, you just like, just whatever. It's fine, because that's something you never get used to. You know what I mean? Like, you can do this incredibly, you know, badass dance with, you know, fire and pyrotechnics, and then you got to stand there in a thong. You know what I mean? Like
So you're making this movie. It made lots of money the first time go around. And so why did you say yes to the sequel?
Well, honestly, because I'd never worked with these guys before, ever. And also, you know, I've done dance films, and I wanted to open up a whole new market. You know what I mean? Not only just with viewers, but then also with the network of people that I've worked with. You know, I'm working with Channing Tatum, Jada Pinkett Smith. You know, that's incredible, especially for somebody that started out in dance. I mean, that's something that's very next level.
So I got to ask you. So how do you explain this film to family members, to your pastor? Like, okay, y'all can skip my next film.
Yeah.
Because someone's like, oh man, when your next film coming out?
not too soon. this one was, you know, the family is very proud, will not be going to see it, you know. In-laws will not be going to see it, you know.
But I can imagine having that conversation the next family get together.
Yeah, you know, because you have to explain, like, no, you know, this movie is not about magic. Right?
You're like, show me how you do it.
Yeah, right.
You ain't going to have that kind of show and tell the family get together.
No. We're going, there'll be others, I told them. There'll be others. You know, grandma, my mom and my grandma, they ain't seen my butt cheek since I was four. You know what I mean? And we're just gonna keep it that
and
way.
And normally when you're in church, you know, Pastor, we're so proud of so-and-so. He's got a new movie coming out.
Just skip right
I don't think Pastor gonna be endorsing.
There'll be others. There'll be others. There will be others.
So out of the guys in the movie, who dances the best and who really is the worst dancer, y'all had to cover it up?
I can't answer that because
Adam Rodriguez.
Yeah, he can.
All right. I know Adam.
Yeah, he can dance, man. But see, what happened is, look,
and Channing think he a baller. So
he can backflip off cars and stuff like that. You know, that's Channing Tatum.
But were there times when you were like, yo, man, let me show you how to do this?
That was kind of built into my character. That was that clip you saw in the Red Room. That was what that scene was about. Was me showing Channing Tatum's character what I was about.
But in real life, you were like, bruh, I got this.
Oh, I got in the character. Absolutely.
I'm just going to bring that with me.
Absolutely. But nah, he's a good dude, hard worker, and everybody is. And our choreographer, Allison Falk, really did a good job of playing to everybody's strengths. So while everybody was not a professional dancer by any means, she picked up on the things, the nuances, and also strengths that she could use in their piece. So every performance is going to be a little different. You know what I mean? We have some songs. We have some prop work. It's gonna be crazy.
So I know this happens. So tell me, just confirm it if it's so.
Okay.
You're going around the country. You're doing interviews. How many times have you had somebody like, all right? Because like normally we have singers they tell you to sing.
Right.
I was like, show me something. I know you're on these radio tours. You like, really? You want me just to start just gyrating yes. right now in the studio?
Yes, yeah. And, you know, more often than not, actually. It's funny because, you know, with an actor, you never go, okay, actor.
Read some movie lines.
Go on, give me a monologue real quick. Like,
right.
You know, you never do that. But people are like, oh, you dance? Let me see something. You know, it's just like, oh, okay, right now? All right, cool. Yeah, it's fine. We're doing an interview, but cool. Yeah, I'll dance with no music.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Right, right. Yeah,
exactly. But
now you be walking down the street and like, yo, do something.
Always. But in the right circumstances, I'll give it to you. You know, if you're asking for a battle, I'll give it to you.
Well, I don't know, because, you know, we will get a little smooth. We'll do a little Chicago stepping,
okay.
Do a little something. So okay. that's how we do
that
it. So
yeah.
I don't know if you want to go there. You go on with your little Magic Mike XXL, you know, but I don't know if you can do grown man smooth.
Hey, that's what I'm saying. Just, that's what I'm saying. I'm going to take it back to the beginning of the interview. We opening up a whole new market. I'm telling you, we might have a lane for you. You know, Magic Mike,
that's okay.
Triple XL.
I'll be the one counting money. As I said, Magic Mike XXL opens in theaters today. Coming up next, Tony Woods, Cletus Cassidy discuss why they were not cashed in Magic Mike XXL.
We ain't got to discuss that. That's obvious.
This is News 1 Now on TV.
Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, it's Wild Night Wednesday. We have comedians in the house. We have Cletus Cassidy, Nikki Moore, and Tony Woods. Nikki, what's up with the bow tie?
Listen, Roland, I wore this bow tie so that we could be imbalanced. You know, bow ties and boobies.
Y'all can be imbalanced?
They wouldn't put on the boobie shirts that I bought, so I had to put on a bow tie.
First of all, my man breast were in here if I just tightened
well,
my shirt up.
Okay, Tony wouldn't put on the boobie shirt. Cletus got a shirt with the boobies already in.
Right, that's it.
So I got this question, and someone actually texted me this because they heard my question to Twitch and Magic XXL. So they wanted to know, Roland, ask Cletus and Tony, do they own G-strings, and do they strip for that woman in when they at home?
Ooh.
First of all, I don't own any strings of any leather. So A, B, C, D, E, F, or G. I don't like anything, and I don't know how to say it correctly on air, in my butt crack. So nothing belongs back there.
Some tell me Tony
look like a G-string kind of guy.
I ain't got no G-string, but somebody bought me one for Christmas.
So you have one?
No, you have to cut it because you print it, the hair get caught in your, you can't get it off. And so you just go with scissors.
So clearly you worn it.
More like a man thong kind of dude.
But no, it was for New Year's. It was for Christmas, and it was like a Rudolph red.
So that's how you celebrate Jesus and
no.
The G-string.
Listen, man, I had the thing on at a New Year's Eve party, and then we left.
Whoa, stop. You wore a G-string to a New Year's Eve party?
No, it was supposed to be a joke.
Was it underneath, or you wore
it underneath?
Out?
It's underneath, but it wasn't a G-string. It was just like a reindeer little face, and like you take your pants out and the horns come out like that. But we got pulled over on the way back, and then they say, you know, when you get arrested, you got to take. I'm like, oh, this is a bad time, dog. And they had the reindeer.
So you was hidden in jail that night.
Does anybody know what the hell Tony just said?
Tony don't even know what Tony just said.
Whenever Tony Woods speaks, we need a legend.
But you know what's so
follow.
Bad about
right.
it?
We need to be able to
this,
follow.
You know what's
know
so bad about it?
No, we need an interpreter.
Yeah. We were all
Hey, Tim does our whitest segment. So, Tim, you're the average white guy here. Stand to the left, stand next to Tony and interpret what the hell Tony's talking about.
Okay. Go ahead. Okay. Run that again.
I got pulled over. And I, as a joke, because somebody had given me a reindeer, a little joke thing from Spencer Gifts. I wore it underneath my suit at the New Year's Eve party, but we got pulled over coming. It was like a random check spot where they didn't actually lock you up, but they got a police trailer. You go in there, and they searching you. So I had to pull my pants down, and I had the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, because the nose light up. And when you pull your pants down, the little horns pop out.
All right, Tim, so, Tim, yeah. What the hell did Tony just say?
He was in a real tight spot with police.
Bang, with reindeer draws on. I mean, there he goes.
I know it's hard to imagine.
Thank you, Tim.
Yeah. But Black Lives Matter.
Yes.
I mean,
they ain't shooting.
What?
Yeah, this right here.
We are just now, I don't know what we just did to the whole Black Lives Matter movement, but it just totally went downhill right then.
Because I'm still with the reindeer and it popping out. And
so the only way that you can make that make sense is that it's a reindeer and it delivers packages.
Yeah.
I had the G-string once.
That got lost.
back in 2001.
Ain't no way they found that back then.
Oh, my goodness.
I ain't seen it in a minute.
So what's up with your grandmama and the Hello Beautiful mask?
My grandmama got this new sleep mask because she ain't been resting like she should, you know, peacefully. So...
What about people who don't know what's going on?
I got this for her at the Jill Scott thing.
You should tell people.
This is my grandmama. This is my grandmama Ashes. Hello, beautiful.
And she comes to the show all the time.
Because she loves Roland Martin. What?
Does she even pronounce the R? Because, you know, old people don't say the R in his name. It's M-A-A-T-I-N.
No, my grandmother was kept. She was kept.
She says so. Martin. It's Martin.
She's still
Martin. Martin. My mama calls it Roland Martin. You going on there with that Roland Martin?
She doesn't pronounce the D though.
Oh.
Roland Martin.
Still is kind of kept.
Roland Martin.
Man, I'm going to go to a break and come back in 60 seconds because obviously we've lost total control here. We'll be back on News 1 Now in a moment.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks. Welcome back to News 1 Now. Tony's still talking about his reindeer G-string.
It was a lowercase G-string.
We have Nick and we have Cletus. All right, so any of y'all have been to the White House?
Yes.
Officially? I've been by it. I'm like,
you were the damn fence jumper? What the hell?
No. Have you seen my athletic ability does not have me jumping fences.
All right, so I'm gonna play you this video because the White House has made a major change in their policy. So check this out. Shelley, go to my iPad, please. Check this out.
If you've been on a White House tour, you may have seen this sign.
It's 15 seconds.
Well,
y'all breathe.
Not anymore.
All right, so if y'all go to the White House, so that means y'all can now bring your cameras if you ever get invited. I doubt it, but you can bring your cameras and you can
shoot. Selfies and stuff like that.
This is a clear sign of the end, and I'm gonna tell you why. When normal people get ready to get off their job, let's just say this is your last day at work, you got 2 hours left, you ain't working hard, you changing rules, you doing whatever you want to do. That's the same thing Obama doing. Mm. He on his way out, he said, y'all do whatever y'all want to do. This stuff he wanted to do in the beginning, but couldn't because he had the re-election coming up. Now that he know he out of there, whatever, anything
amazing
goes.
Amazing grace.
They gonna be cooking out in the backyard. We just gonna skip
that. Well, they did that already. They had the Girl Scouts.
Right, the Girl Scouts. The Girl Scouts.
Cooking out in the backyard.
They were camping out.
Playing horseshoes.
We got a special coming up with Frankie Beverly Mays. It's gonna be airing real soon.
Before I let go.
It's called Simply Amazing.
Before.
Hello, beautiful.
All right.
She'll be called
I made the point, you know, they had that little concert with Prince at the house. They invited brother too, you know, when he was in town. Mm-hmm. But I believe they need to have, for Black Music Month, straight up, a party on the White House lawn, everybody in white linen, and then Frankie Beverly.
A white party at the White House. I like it. You know what they ought to do?
You gotta have George Clinton there.
You wanna be real?
He's the one who predicted all of this in the first place.
Tupac said it may seem heavy. No,
okay, look. First of all, he can't pass the drug test to get to the White House.
At all. George Clinton.
Oh, they clean
now. He's still got this.
Clean now. Has he paid his taxes?
The dude in the Pampa ain't clean.
Well, I don't know. Trump didn't pay his taxes. He's been in the White House.
Dude in the Pampa ain't clean. I don't care what you say.
I'm just saying, but you gonna start just doing stuff? I'm telling you, can you imagine a bunch of Black folks line dancing on the White House lawn?
Killing the grass. Destroying the grass. You know what we all to do? He ought to do an executive order and had an Essence Festival at his crib. That's it.
You know what? That's a good
Essence
idea.
Essence Festival, White House, blow
Bam.
It out.
Damn.
You know what?
They will tear that Jake down before he goes.
He ain't got nothing to lose.
You know what? Right. I mean, right. I mean, the bow tie's making you look smarter and sound smarter.
Boom.
Go on, Cletus. Change that damn name. Cletus. All right. We got to go, folks. I will see you guys tomorrow right here at News One Now. And y'all can still laugh at Tony and his G-string. Holla.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.